Today, we have three items before the committee. Time now is 15:45. We have full committees, Senator Green, McGuire, Stevens, Huggins, Bert Stedman, Bill Wilikowski, my good friend Tom Wagner. Our first item is House Joint Resolution 14, Exxon Plaintiffs, House Resolution 2419, and then the next item will be Governor's Appointments and Finance Bill 284. And with that, we have Representative Paul Seaton with us. Paul, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Committee. This is a resolution from the Fisheries Committee, and I appreciate you taking it up at this time. U.S. Senators Murkowski and Stevens were able to have this provision included in the H.R. 2419, and it is now in conference committee, so it's an appropriate timing. The senator was just here, and she said it would be helpful to have resolution as soon as we could. And what this does is supports what they have got incorporated in that farm and energy bill, which would allow the 30-some thousand plaintiffs in the Exxon lawsuit, if they get a judgment from the Supreme Court, as you know, it's been appealed and it's in the decision phase, it would allow them to take this one-time amount and do a three-year income averaging, just like farmers can, because this would be a because of very variable income, and it would also allow those people to deposit more into a retirement account. And so that's all this resolution is doing is asking the U.S. Senate and House Conference Committee to support what our senators have got put into this bill. It was previously Representative Young was able to incorporate that into the farm bill last year, and then it was the energy bill, and then it got pulled out at that time, and then the senators were able to put it into this other bill on the Senate side, and now it's back to conference committee. So that's where the bill is, and this is basically just to support people that might get a settlement from that claim to increase their IRA and or other retirement account, as well as income averages.
Okay, questions for Representative Seaton? Would you just remind us of what the present timeline is on the Exxon Valdez settlement, what it appears?
Mr. Chairman, it should be sometime in June, okay, is what we're looking at.
Okay.
From the Supreme Court.
Do we have anybody online or in the room to speak to this?
Mr.
Yes, Senator Green.
What would the net effect in actuality be? How would actually happen?
Senator Green, through the chair. It will be totally dependent on the individual circumstances, because it's not a one-size-fit-all claim. In other words, the claims are going to be based on what fisheries people participated in, what their amount of their claim was before. So on the punitive damages, if it would go as the Ninth Circuit had, then it would average about $75,000 per claimant. But there's a wide variation in the amount of that claim, because people that participate in the Prince William Sound fisheries were much more impacted than somebody out at Chignik or Sandpoint or in Cook Inlet. So the claims are quite variable based on their losses.
And I think I understand, but you're asking benefit them by authorizing increases in the deductions and income caps applicable to traditional IRAs, Roth IRAs, and other qualified to average income from '94 to forward, and you're talking about maybe what the difference would have been had they been able to invest an average amount per year and its growth, and that they would be able to not have to declare that as income. in the year they receive the claim?
Senator Green, through the chair, no. What this is, it wouldn't be the growth. What it would be doing is just allowing them to put a larger amount into their IRA or Roth IRA right now, or SEP account. What there is there's a different limitations. $25,000 is the maximum amount that can go into a SEP IRA. This would raise that to $100,000. It would just raise the cap on what they could put in any 1 year and be qualified. And these are the provisions that Senator Stevens and Senator Murkowski were able to get included in the U.S. Congress, in the bill that is now in conference committee there. All we're doing with this resolution is supporting Senator Stevens and Senator Murkowski and what Representative Young, the exact same provision that he was able to include in last year in the bill that went forward, and then there was some dispute, so it got pulled out at that time. So there's no provision here that we in the Alaska legislature are attempting to change any requirements. We're just supporting what they put in, but that is what they put in back there, is that people could income average, just like farmers do, over a three-year period, because they have highly variable income, and so they get the average to, and that reduces their individual year's tax rate for that high year. It would be the income average in as currently permitted for the IRS for farmers, and it would also raise the amount that you could deposit into a retirement account in a single year. And the justification that's getting here is that people didn't have this money over a long period of time, so where they could have put it in at a lower rate. So it's a single damage award that comes at one point in time, so that what they're trying to do is, the justification is spreading it out as if they would have deposited it over many years, but there's nothing that gives them credit for what that would have earned over that period of time.
Would this be, have any other groups been allowed this provision, or do you know?
Senator Green, through the chair, I know that farmers can do this every year. They can income average. You can only do it, I forget whether it's 2 out of 5 years, but income averaging is something that is permitted under the tax code for certain groups that have highly variable income. And so this is extending the benefit that farmers currently enjoy. Fishermen used to enjoy that same provision, and that's no longer allowed for fishermen, but is still allowed for farmers. So that provision is in the IRS code, and it just extends it for this one-time distribution that to the recipients, and they're not all fishermen. I mean, there's tendermen, there are, but it all has to be individuals under these IRA kind of accounts.
Well, maybe I don't understand what income averaging is, because you're calculating something from 94 through 2008, 2009, 2010, and I just don't understand. Don't get it, but
But is it three-year increments? You said farmers had three-year increments. This is from 94 through, let's just say, 08, for conversation's sake. You can income average across that full spectrum?
And Senator Huggins, I believe that's what this is, though, you know, I didn't have anything to do with the construction of this. So our senators have done it, and I think that that's what it is. It's allowing it over a longer period of time. I'm just saying that income averaging is currently allowed for farmers over every 3 year period. But this is over a much longer period of time.
This is language that's just pulled from the bill. I understand. Senator Wagner, then Senator Stevens. Senator Stevens?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to make sure I understand this, fishing can be quite variable as to the amount of income from 1 year to the other, and it, it's all over the place, of course, but it seems to be what this does, and correct me if I'm wrong, Paul, but if a fisherman were to be awarded $75,000 average claim, he could take that amount of money and spread it over a three-year period, so it would add $25,000 to his income for the 3 years in a row. Is that what we're talking about? And you're taxed at that rate rather than being taxed at $75,000 on top of your present year's income. Do I understand that right?
Senator Stevens, through the chair. That's the way it would work on a three-year income averaging for farmers. What has been pointed out here is this is from the time of the original award in 94 through now as if it was spread out over that time. So it's spread out of more multiple years as I understand this. Again, what it does, it all taxes will be paid on it all, but it'll just be the lower tax rate. In other words, the tax rate will be spread, will be paid as if you earned a portion of that money in each one of those years instead of all in 1 year, which increases the tax rate. But you'd have to go back and recalculate those taxes for that year. You don't get free money in those years. You have to go back and add, you know, one fourteenth, whatever the yearly portion is, to each year of your tax calculation. So you don't get off free. But what it does is it lowers that maximum tax rate, is what it does.
Well, just a second. To wrap this up, I mean, I think I understand it, and of course, I think how we can justify it is that fishermen have been so mistreated through this whole thing. It's taken years and years to be resolved, and so if we can give them a small benefit here, in accordance with what our congressional delegation has suggested, I think it's something we should do.
Okay. Senator Wilkowski and Senator Stedman.
So just so I understand, so if someone gets $1 million, then instead of paying the max cap rate, which is 35 or 37.5%, which would be $370,000 in taxes this year, they get to spread that out since 1994, which would be 13 years, and pay a much, much lower tax rate, and also be able to put in for a Roth IRA, anyway, about $4,000 a year for the last 13 years or so. Is that?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, yes, that's my understanding.
Thank you.
Well, I'm sorry, Senator Stedman, go ahead.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm just kind of curious, Rep. Seaton, as a participant in the fishing industry, are you one of the beneficiaries of this potential settlement? And if so, how much?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, I did have tenders that participated in the cleanup, and also I had tenders that lost income, and I don't know what that would be because they haven't figured out on the tenders yet. They've figured out the fishermen distributions, and I just don't know what it would be on the tenders because the tender settlements haven't been figured out yet.
Well, it's really simple. Nobody knows how much they're going to get because nobody's come up with a final figure or a way to. I mean, the method's there. The methodology is defined as how they're going to distribute it. But you got to have a figure before you can start putting it into the formula and distribute it. And nobody has that figure yet. There's percentages out there, but percentages of what, nobody knows.
Okay. Senator Bedman.
Is the list of beneficiaries in existence and already been defined over the last several years, so we know who is on the list and who has passed away and who's still alive? And
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, yes, that has been there. There's, I think it's 33,000 are the class action folks that are listed, and that can, I don't have that here, but that is available.
Are there former members of the legislature besides yourself that might be a candidate, or present members that might be a candidate for this settlement? I mean, I'm not expecting you to know the whole list. Just did they come to mind?
Mr. Chairman, you don't have to look very far for them. I'm one of them.
Okay. All right. So we got two.
I think that Mr.
Where was it from?
Clem Tillion's son-in-law.
Okay.
I can't remember. Sam Cotton, I believe. Might be. I think that anybody that participated in the fisheries in Prince William Sound, Kodiak, Cook Inlet, Chignik, would all be at some point in there.
Yeah, Senator Stevens. Just for full disclosure, I think I have a couple of adult children who may benefit, but they're not going to give me any part of it, so there you are.
And Senator Huggins, if I might just say that, you know, this was Fisheries Committee. It wasn't personal legislation.
Oh, yeah, no, I understand.
Just so you know.
Let me just go back to one particular element on page 1, lines 14 and 15. The increases deductions is really referring to Roth IRAs because you can make a larger contribution, you get a larger deduction. Is that what we're talking about?
That is correct, Senator Huggins.
All right. Other questions for Representative Heaton or comments? Oh. Unconfirmed. Okay. Next, we have one person on the line, Mr. Paul Shadura in Soldotna. Hey, welcome, Paul.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman Huggins. This is Paul Shadura, Kenai Peninsula. I'm speaking solely for myself, and I have to disclose I am one of the claimants. This has been going a long time, and there's a lot of wounds, to say, within the industry, and those that were affected directly from the industry or indirectly. But I think not to lose sight of what's going on here. We all know that the Exxon case has been heard in the Supreme Court, and the legislature, our legislator Lisa Murkowski, and Senator Murkowski, and of course Senator Stevens, Congressman Young, all been working to get this finalization of this bill through. I think it's in the Congress at present. It's gone through the Senate. This would be supporting their actions. I think it's important here just to realize what this bill will do for the state, and that it allows those claimants that are residents of the state that are here to maintain some kind of retirement prospect for them, and I think that's good for our stability of our state, our finances, as a lot of us grow older and we're in that 50-year age group and over. I think it's important that these residents remain here in the state, and this allowance, where I think it's up to $100,000 to be put in an IRA, would definitely be more stability and take less drain off the state as the age population require more assistance. The other thing aspect is the income averaging, I think, is primarily the discussion about when the actual claim took place, when the payout is, and where were the tax laws applicable to that particular time when the case was settled, or when it is the tax laws that apply now. There's a lot of nuances in the bill that I'm really not the expertise to talk about, but to say that there's a lot of other good things in here that will maintain those incomes within the state, and I think that's important. Otherwise, quite frankly, with the taxation situation, most of this money would go directly to the federal government, and as we know, it's pretty tough to get it back once we give it away. So anyway, I'll just leave it at that, and thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you, Paul. Questions or comments for Mr. Shadura? Yeah, thanks, Paul. Is there anyone else online? Okay, we have Mr. Jerry McCune. Jerry, are you here?
Thanks.
Paul, why don't you just remain there just for a moment, and Jerry's only going to be 3 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name's Jerry McCune. I represent Cordova District Fishermen United, which is a big portion of the claimants. You got to understand that this doesn't get you out of the tax obligation whatsoever. Once you withdraw your money from an IRA, you're going to pay the taxes. So it just lets the claimants be able to put up to $100,000 into an IRA that we felt over time that there was a lot of places in there where we couldn't fish really a lot of times, you know, during the 89 and plus after. And then the price drop dramatically after the oil spill that a lot of folks didn't get a chance to put retirement away if there wasn't an oil spill. So this is an opportunity for them to do that. The income averaging drops your obligation, as the senator talked about before, from 35% to probably around 28%. It would drop your obligation on the tax part of it. So, and that, and it's in the Farm Bill presently. Senator Murkowski's, there are still some things in the Farm Bill that's a little quirky to the president, and so they're looking for another avenue in case that happens, that there might be vetoed to put on another bill. But we worked on this bill really hard. We've been working on it for 5 months, and it's still sitting back there in the Farm Bill, so we're hoping that we can get this if there is some kind of award come forward, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, thank you, Jerry. Questions or comments for Jerry? Yes, Senator McGuire.
No question, but just a comment. Maybe Representative Seaton researched this. Senator Green and I were just discussing. Only certain types of settlements are taxable. Compensatory settlements would, I don't think, are taxable. Medical are not. So really, is it that you're trying to narrow down the punitive damages part?
Senator McGuire, through the chair. Yes, the settlement that is out there at the Supreme Court is punitive damages. And I just might say one other thing is, one thing that we are hoping is that this could be an encouragement for people to put some money, more money into a retirement account. There is that fear among many people that if the settlement comes through, there's going to be a lot of money on the table quickly, and people often make mistakes and don't invest wisely. And so hopefully this would provide for an incentive for some of that money to go off of the table and be there for Alaskans in their retirement years.
Yes, Senator McGuire.
And that's and through the chair. And so, and I would just say, you know, just the way the resolution is phrased, it does confuse the issue just a little bit, that it's not compensatory and it really isn't as a result of income loss. It's a separate issue. It's really a matter of punishment and punitive damages, you know, designed to deter. So it just the way it's phrased, and the policy, you know, behind that is, you know, clearly if you're compensating for a loss to make them whole, then you're not going to tax them on it. But when it's punitive, we do tax. So it would go, I'm all in favor of people saving, and I don't have a problem with the bill, but just that should be clear.
Senator Green.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, because this, and I would agree with Senator McGuire, this does, in line 9 of the first page said they suffered economically, and so as a result of that, I would assume it was compensatory damages, and that's why I couldn't figure out that it was taxable. And ask another question. Yep. So you can go back 14 years and recalculate?
Senator Green, through the chair, I believe that that's what our U.S. senators and our U.S. representative included in the bills in the U.S. Congress. I had nothing to do with the construction of the bill. We're just, you know, this resolution simply supports the inclusion of some of that money in IRAs and income averages.
Jerry, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, if I remember right, my last update I got on this bill, it's not 14 years now. It's cut back a little bit. I think there was a lot of negotiations when this was written between now and then, but the amount is $100,000 for the IRA, and I think it's a 5-year income average, and after negotiations and changing around in the bill a couple times, and people, you know how that works. All works the same way here. So I think it's 5 years now. It's not 14, I know that.
But this isn't binding in that respect. It's
no.
Just showing support.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another clarification. This keeps talking about Alaskans, and I understand we're writing resolutions for Alaskans, but people that were commercial fishermen in the era of this occurrence are not excluded, and quite frankly are included as far as the effect of if this resolution had an effect. Is that accurate?
That's my understanding. It would be anyone that received, any plaintiff that received money.
Any member of the class that's in the suit. There are some people elected not to be in the class with the suit. There are some people that have worked their own settlements out previously, and so there's some people excluded, but that's a pretty small minority.
Yeah, Jerry, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, there is a plaintiff in at least one plaintiff in each state.
Say that one more time.
There's at least one plaintiff in each state. All the states, there's plaintiffs in all the states, including Hawaii.
Okay. All right. You answered that question. And just so we know what we're voting on here, my assumption that there's, you know, this widespread number of people and a whole bunch of people still in Alaska, that there's also the potential that these people we're talking about have been compensated previously in some shape, form, or another from this occurrence?
You want me to answer that, or you want to answer that? Or?
Mr.
Chairman, there was a quick settlement from Alyeska, small settlement among the fishermen and others affected. And they settled out of court right away. And then there was the compensatory damages that ranged, actually Exxon paid for the herring right off the bat, paid the fishermen off because there was no season in Prince William Sound. And then the compensatory damages came out, and which have not all been awarded yet because some of that money is held back. Plus you had to mitigate, which they call mitigate. So you had to make some of that money had to go back. And then also in this settlement here too, you can pretty well figure any amount of money you're going to get is half goes to attorneys and half would go to IRS, except for this lets you put it into an IRA, but then you end up paying the taxes when you withdraw it. But there was compensatory damages, and you had to pay your mitigation part, which whether you were fishing, working, or whatever you were doing. So part of that money went back.
Right.
And there was some compensatory damages. There's all ranges of compensatory damages depending on where you were and if your fishery was closed or not closed, and there's all kinds of considerations of that.
Yeah, and I'm asking you questions. I have no idea what the answer is. Just, I think it's, you know, information that, I mean, people might as well understand, like me as an example, I have no idea about compensation, but be that as it may, a person, let's just say that they were, quote, a lucky person that got, you mentioned a little settlement, and then what would that number look like if you pull those all together?
On the Mr.
Withstanding Chairman. This provision withstanding, right?
With the compensatory?
Yeah, just forget about punitive.
Okay.
Right? A person that was lucky up front and was had some awards, which you described may have been multiple awards, forget about taxes, just take it in gross. What would that number look like?
Well, I'm trying to think what that number was. It was
Senator Huggins, first I'd like to say that I wouldn't classify any of these as lucky enough.
No, I understand.
Because it was
lucky,
you know,
in the respect that they got a bigger number than a smaller number in comparison to maybe their peers.
But what I wanted to say was the compensatory numbers were based on your fishing history.
Right.
And so there wasn't you know, I'm not aware of people that received more than they would have made fishing,
right,
minus their expenses, because the expenses all had to be taken out. So those compensatory damages were a calculation on what was your direct loss.
Right.
And
let me ask another way. A good fisherman would have received how much money? A good, successful fisherman.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's hard to answer because it depends whether you're fishing in Kodiak or Prince William Sound or Cook Inlet. In Cook Inlet.
William Sound.
Prince William Sound, some of those guys probably received, boy, you're trying to tax my memory on this. I think some of those guys received $20,000 and some received up to, $60,000, $70,000, minus mitigation part of it.
And I think there were larger
ones
because,
than that.
You know, permits. If you were a sane boat captain and permit owner, the compensation would have been considerably more than that, I believe.
Or a dual permit holder.
Yeah.
If you have two permits.
Yeah. And that's not to, to belittle the trauma of this whole thing. I mean, you know, somebody that got hit by Hurricane Katrina, no matter how much money they've got, there's a lot of trauma and maybe never move back to Louisiana. Senator Wagner.
Well, maybe we can put an end to the discussion because really every fishery is different. And in addition to every fishery being different, like in Cook Inlet, the range of settlements early on, and they weren't really a settlement, it was a payment because they didn't fish, ranged from $20,000 to $100,000. It was based on your previous 5 years of production. And in addition to that, there are two or three things that haven't been talked about, but for instance, the native corporations had already made settlements and agreed to settlements, and to become a part of the current lawsuit that's going on, the punitive damages, they gave up those monies that they made, and that was divided among the group that was in the punitive damage. So it's so complex. I couldn't even tell you how much money I'd gotten from it over a period of time, because there's a little pot here, a little pot here, a little pot over here. So it's...
It was educational for me.
Okay, other questions or comments? With that, we've heard all the people have signed up for testimony. Senator Stevens?
Mr. Chairman, are you ready to move this out?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move CS for House Joint Resolution number 14, rules/O, out of committee with individual recommendations.
Is there objection? Yes.
I'll just object for a moment. I just like to state I may have a conflict in this because I am one of the participants in the lawsuit. And with that, I'll remove my objection.
You're going to have to throw a party at the end of all this.
Mr. Chairman, if I get a check, and I will throw a party, but I don't expect to get a
That's
check.
That's why I keep saying my good friend Tom Wagner.
Now we know why.
You've been trying to the party. Oh,
you got it. See?
We thought maybe just because he had just one friend.
Yes. I haven't spent any of mine yet.
Okay, seeing no further objections, this resolution will move from committee. Thank you very much. And with that, we'll take a brief at ease. Congratulations.
We look at each other every time we do that.
Next, we'll take up the governor's appointment to Alaska Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, Mr. Frank Holman. Welcome, Frank. Put yourself on the record and any affiliations you might have.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I apologize for the cell phone.
One dozen donuts.
All right, thank you. My name is Frank Holman. I'm currently serving as one of the commissioners at the Limited Entry Commission, and I'm here before you today for my reappointment confirmation, and I'm hoping that you have my resume in front of you, or I could start at the beginning, but I won't do that to you unless you want to know more about it, but spent most of my life here in Alaska, and started in the fishing business with my family in Ketchikan, so I grew up here and worked my way through the state government and private industry for about half the time. So, and I was fortunate to be appointed to the Entry Commission and have served there, and with your concurrence, would like to continue to serve there and be happy to answer questions if there are any. I didn't make a prepared statement, but.
So you've been a resident of Alaska more than 60 years, huh?
That's correct.
Yeah, very good.
For sure.
Questions or comments, Mr. Holman? Well, and while we're other people are formulating their questions, you're in Special Forces, huh?
Well, that's correct.
Military question. Tell us about that.
All right. Well, that was one of the highlights of my life, actually. And you'll appreciate this, but I was a three-time volunteer, volunteered for the Army, and volunteered for the Airborne, and volunteered for Special Forces. So I had a good tour of duty, and spent most of it in North Carolina, as you might imagine from your background. So it was most of my tour of duty was it was early before the buildup in Vietnam, so I was out in 1965. So, but we were I was an intelligence unit, and we did you will appreciate this. We did the debriefing of the teams that came back from Vietnam, and made lessons learned for instruction for the teams that were heading for Vietnam. So it was quite an interesting.
Yeah, very good. Thanks, Senator Wagner.
Didn't everybody tell you that you aren't supposed to volunteer?
That's
tell you the consequences do. Of that. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's worked both ways.
So when you got out, how old were you?
When I got out, I was 25.
Good for you. When did you move here?
In 1946.
Yeah. Good for you.
Which was also connected with the military in the sense that it was after World War II, and during World War II, I was born in San Francisco, but my father worked on the Alaska Highway, and so that's how he got acquainted with wow. southeastern Alaska. And so he, when the war was over, we moved to Ketchikan, and he became a fisherman. So.
Wow. And in what capacity did your father work on the highway? I mean, that's one of the engineering marvels of our country.
He was a boilermaker, a welder. He'd been working on the ships in San Francisco, and him up here and was a welder. I don't know exactly, you know, right. his right. daily activities, but.
Yeah, well, thank you for your service. Yes, Senator Stevens.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to say it's been a pleasure working with Mr. Holman over the years. Eight paltry years here in the legislature, and it's been a pleasure working with Frank on various fisheries issues. I just popped out of here the Holman McDowell Marketing Services. Who were the principals of that, anyway?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stevens, thank you for the comments. I think it was about 1975, Eric McDowell, who you may know, had a small business called McDowell Marketing Services. And at that time, I had a small business that was economic consulting. And so we found that we were often hiring each other to help us on projects that we got. So we formed a partnership, and that lasted for many years. And then we parted, and I went on to the legislature, actually, to work with Senator Sturgalewski. And he continued, and that business is still today, the McDowell Group, which I'm sure many of you are familiar with the work that they do.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I say, it's been, I know I've asked a lot of stupid questions of Mr. Holman, and he's not laughed, and he's always come back with an answer.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. I noticed, Mr. Frank, that you were once upon a time in the retirement benefits business for the state. You were on the legislative board of retirement benefits. Did you ever imagine that somebody would report that retirements was in debt by $8 to $10 billion? What was it when you heard that number? Did you say, "Well, I was just dreaming that"? What do you mind,
Mr. Chairman? That was a long time ago, but it was at a time when they were trying to figure out the retirement system. But no, I wouldn't have right. guessed that at all.
In your experience in the fishery business, specifically in the capacity that we're looking at you, what if you think back in your experiences, what one major learning experience sticks in your mind that you learned based on being part of the process?
The work that, Mr. Chairman, the work that the commission does, the three commissioners sit as an appeal board, and it's when people are denied a limited entry permit, they can appeal to the commissioners, and we review it. And I think the thing that is important to it, and that means a lot, is that this is someone's livelihood that you're working with, and it's a very responsible decision-making process, because if they're denied, they lose the access to the fishery, and the only other way into it is to buy into it. So we have to look at the history of the person and the participation that they've had in the fishery, and try to come to a fair and reasonable decision based on the statutes and the regulations. So it's not a decision that's made lightly, and so I appreciate that about it, because each case, and there are thousands of them over the years, is important to somebody, and so I think it makes you be responsible and to look seriously at all the claims that we get.
Yeah, and given that consideration, and obviously I can tell by your tone, that's one you take very seriously. What would be a time frame that it takes to go through that process for an individual?
Oh, Chairman, that's a hard question. Like, how much money are you going to get from the settlement? It depends on the nature of the fisheries and the history of the applicant, but it can take several years. Because they have an opportunity to provide information, they have an opportunity to ask for a hearing, and they have at least two appeal processes within the commission itself, and they can bring in mitigating circumstances that, for example, if someone didn't participate in a fishery 1 year, they under the point system that we create. They normally wouldn't get any points for that, but if it was a situation where they had a medical problem and they couldn't fish during that year, then we would review that and take they would be able to submit information from doctors or the hospital or something, and then we in some cases would be able to grant them the points even though they didn't fish, because they would have fished except for that. So some of that gathering of evidence can take a considerable amount of time, and so it could be a several year process.
Permit buybacks, you have any experience with that?
Mr. Chairman, that's a hard question. We have not had a permit buyback on the state level. We have a provision for that, but it's a complicated analysis to get to that. And we have done what we call an optimum number study. That's the prerequisite for a buyback in several fisheries. The problem that arises in the state statutes is that the buybacks have to be funded by someone, and it can be funded by the fishermen, or it can be funded by the legislature. We haven't had any funding from either of those groups on any fishery, and a lot of it is that the fishermen are not quite ready to contribute to a fund to buy back that could extend over years, and so it doesn't work very well. But there are also provisions that there can be a buybacks funded by other sources, such as the federal government, And there's some of that through Magus and Stevens Act that can be used, and there's one under being developed now with that source of funding. But for the most part, we haven't had a buyback on the state level.
Other questions or comments for Mr. Holman? I have one final question for you, Mr. Holman, and it has to do with if you look at the fisheries, are there any aspects of fisheries that you're concerned about in the intra-commission piece that you've had any experience with?
Mr. Chairman, I guess if I was going to look at the future, and this is something that I think the state will have to deal with sooner or later, and that would be a fishery that we call the Gulf of Alaska groundfish. And what's going to happen there is there's the fisheries are divided between the federal fisheries and the state fisheries by the 3-mile line. The federal government, the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, is likely to limit the groundfish in the Gulf of Alaska sometime in the next few years. There have already been proposals in front of them, and it's still under analysis. When that happens, the state is going to have to, in my opinion, the state is going to have to do something to protect the state waters, because people that will be denied access to the federal waters, if we still have open fisheries in the state waters, we'll be able to come into those fisheries and just increase the pressure on it. So I see that as sort of the next major event in the state fisheries.
Okay. Let's take just a brief at ease. Excuse me, as you were. Any final questions or comments on Mr. Holman's motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we forward Mr. Holmes' nomination name on to the administration for approval.
Okay. And in accordance with, is there objection to that? In accordance with Alaska Statute 3905.080, Resources Committee reviewed the following, recommends appointments to be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. Commissioner of Alaska Commercial Fisheries Intra-Commission Frank Holman. This does not reflect any intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of the individual during any further sessions. Okay, so everybody understands that. And we will take a brief at ease. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Holman. Resource will come back to order, and we have before us now the CS for Senate Bill 284, an act relating to the membership of the Board of Fisheries, providing for an effective date. And we have a number of people that have signed up to speak to the bill. Senator Green, is there anything you want to add before we go to the public testimony?
I think so.
Okay. Okay. All right. Very good. So let's now go to Kenai LIO and Mr. Dwight Kramer. Dwight, are you there?
I am.
Yeah, please put yourself on the record in any affiliation, and we'd be proud to hear from you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dwight Kramer, 47083 Belmont Court, Kenai, Alaska. Today I'm speaking to you as chairman of the Kenai Area Fishermen's Coalition. Kenai Area Fishermen's Coalition is a Joe Fishermen's group of concerned citizens and local fisheries professionals dedicated to preserving the rights and privileges of private anglers as well as other users of the resource. We have 10 retired fisheries biologists on our board of directors and approximately 150 members to date. About half of our board of directors participate in the Kenai area personal use fisheries. We do not support the language in this bill that dictates Board of Fish seat requirements for select user groups. We feel it takes away the authority and flexibility of the governor to fill seats necessary to maintain balance between user groups and representation from a diverse demographic areas throughout the state of Alaska. The need for regulatory changes in the state's personal use fisheries has been minimal. For example, the Kenai and Tsleil-Waututh rivers provide the largest personal use fishery opportunity in the state, and there's been very little need for Board of Fisheries regulatory changes in this fishery. At the recent February Upper Cook Inlet Board of Fish meeting, there was approximately 300 proposals brought forth, only 13 regarding personal use fisheries. The board and the department saw no need for reduction or liberalizations in household limits or seasonal adjustments. Personal use interests were adequately represented in the committee process by ourselves, Kenai River Sport Fishing Association, and the South Central Alaska Dip Netters Association. This should demonstrate, at the very least, that there is little need for an abundance of representation on the Board of Fish from their personal use user group. It should also be understood that there is a good chance that at least some members of the board at any given time have at one time or another participated in personal use activities and understand their perspectives in the regulatory process. Both personal use and subsistence users also have required placement in local advisory committee process that works as an arm of the Board of Fisheries. And subsistence users participate in the regulatory process through various regional advisory councils and the Federal Subsistence Board. And once again, Kenai Area Fishermen's Coalition opposes this bill for the stated reasons, and we appreciate the opportunity to testify before you today. Be glad to answer any questions you might have.
Okay, thank you very much, Dwight. Any questions or comments for Mr. Kramer? Seeing none, next we will go to Mr. Jerry Merrigan in Petersburg.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jerry Merrigan. I live in Petersburg, Alaska. I've commercially fished since 1981, and I've participated in sport and personal use fisheries. I've been attending Board of Fish meetings on and off over the last 20 years for Southeast issues, statewide crab issues, and Bering Sea issues. If you look at the volume of proposals Board of Fish members go through, you get a pretty healthy respect for what they do. I oppose this bill. It brings in two aspects, designated seats by sectors, and a limit on family affiliations of what family members can do for a living. I think both are very impractical. Current requirement for the board is for individuals that are knowledgeable of the fisheries of the state. And I can tell you, the pool of knowledgeable, good people that are willing to do this work and make the necessary time commitment and fill out the new financial disclosure forms is not that big a pool. It's pretty hard to find good, willing people, and this legislation will make that pool considerably smaller. If the goal is to get a fair board that follows a good public process and uses the best science, this legislation doesn't do it. By designating seats to sectors, I believe you'll do just the opposite. The result will be Board of Fish members that will be entrenched in representing just their sector and not the public interest at large. My best guess is the volume of proposals aggregated statewide is 70% commercial related, 20% sport and personal use, 5% subsistence, and probably 5% related to allocation issues. Unfortunately, that 5%, the allocation issues, the ones that get all the attention. And I would ask this committee to have a bigger view of the world and look at the entire volume of board decisions over multiple cycles of addressing the same issues. This legislation seems to be responding to one event at one time. No doubt it's important to those constituents. But the legislation proposes to fix a system that's not broken and uses a sledgehammer to do it. A good allocation decision is when all parties walk away a bit unhappy. 3 years ago, after the Cook Inlet cycle of meetings, the commercial fishermen were really upset with the Board of Fish. And after this cycle, it appears that some of the Upper Cook Inlet guides are upset. I walked away not happy from the Board of Fish, but in the end, I have to look at the big picture. Was it a fair process? Some folks think it's a fair process if they just got what they wanted. I think a fair process is where the public can provide input along with Fish and Game and Department of Law, and the board members allow that input right at the deliberations, and the knowledgeable board members make a decision weighing in on all the factors. I think that's a good public process. In closing, I would just say the limit on affiliation seems to be designed to prevent knowledgeable people from participating on the board. It also prevents residents in smaller communities from participating. In smaller communities, you have to do what you have to do to make a living and get your food. So there's commercial deckhands who have charter boats and personal use fish, and this affiliation limit makes it almost impossible, I think, for people that do a lot of different activities from participating in the board process. Thank you very much for listening to me today, and I'll take any questions if you have them.
Yeah, and thank you, Jerry. Stand by. You have a question from Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Jerry. I wasn't fast enough to jot down the percentages you gave. Tell me again. You were talking about the percentage of effort the board makes to in each of these major areas. Was that true?
I think this is over the years, Senator Stevens, Mr. Chairman. Over the years, I've had to look at a lot of proposals. Book again, you know, statewide issues, southeast. And probably in the Cook Inlet area, it might be 50-50 sport commercial. But if you step back and look at what the board does, my best guess is 70% commercial related. I'd say 20% sport, and I put personal use in with sport, since you have to have a sport license to do personal use. 5% subsistence. And then 5%, I think, are the hot button issues where you have all the overlap between allocation issues. And that's just my personal guesstimate.
Thank you very much, Jerry. And my limited experience with the board, I think you're pretty correct, pretty right on in those percentages. Thank you.
Jerry, it's Charlie Huggins here from Wasilla. My question for you, I mean, you have extensive experience, sounds like, with the board, and where you've at least attended a large number of meetings, sounds like. You know, most things over time can undergo some product improvement. Any thoughts that come to mind that might be beneficial as we look forward about how we've done it and how we might should do it?
Senator Huggins, the only thing I could see is to get good people on there, is we're wearing them out. And I, right now, any member of the public can put in any proposal, and sometimes people, to make a point, will put in 20 individuals will put the same proposal in, and it creates a paper trail. And I, when they were talking, I guess during the salmon restructuring, I thought that process, not to deny the public access, but try to eliminate proposals that A, were duplicative, and B, proposals, sometimes people don't read the reg books, they're complicated, and they'll put in proposals asking for things that are actually already in regulation. I think in terms of going for fair and balanced, I think you just, I guess you just have to step back and look at it over a longer period of time and not try to react off a single issue at a single meeting is my only suggestion.
Okay, thank you very much. Senator Green has a question for you.
I just have a kind of a comment. I would suggest that since I have been here is that there is a de facto appointment by designation of the user group. And if you look at, I know I had a listing come from, I think, boards and commissions the other day, and it was not the official list that we get, but it was something that said we talked about the other day, a commercial fisherman from Kodiak and a commercial fisher from Sitka, port fish from Juneau, et cetera, et cetera. And so it's already done by user group and geographic, although I think we are prohibited, I'm not sure, but I think we're prohibited in the Constitution on doing the geographic designation. Or we would have suggested there be some kind of statewide and probably a wider, you know, a group of various folks. However, there probably is a pretty good geographic, so it's already being done. That is. So to say that you don't want to designate it by user group, in some instances, that's already there. This would just sort of give instructions to give designations and admit what we're doing and kind of clearly define it. And if these are, you know, there's an imbalance here, then, you know, work on that.
Yeah, Jerry, I don't think that was a question for you. It was just a comment. That was just a comment.
It's just something we have
can I
noticed.
Respond on the regional aspect, though, Mr. Chairman?
Sure.
I think there has been a while there are no designated seats and you want good people, that's the overriding concern.
Absolutely.
And but I think there always has been a look to try to keep Alaska as a region represented, because the issues are very complicated region to region. So I think there is, and it's de facto a regional, but not necessarily regional in sector. I think you get the throwing too many small boxes, but it's nice to have people from all areas of the mm-hmm. state that can go back and talk to all the people in their region, whether it be personal use, subsistence, or commercial, and bring their, you know, understand the issues.
And I would agree. I would agree.
Yep. The Senator agrees, or Senator Green's saying she agrees with you in that respect. Okay. Jerry, thank you very much. And Senator Wagner has a question or comment.
Well, it's more a comment, but Jerry brought up one thing that hadn't been discussed much by this committee, and he's exactly on the money. And if you haven't been in the process and tried to find somebody who would be a good, well-rounded individual, whether it's a commercial fisherman or sports fisherman, to serve on the Board of Fish, and then go to that person personally as a friend and try and talk them into serving on that Board of Fish, you haven't lived. And the point he made about it's a very, very small pool that's available of good qualified people to put on the Board of Fish is exactly on point. And that's the main reason I'm not worried about. I would care less if we had seven fair sports fishermen on the Board of Fish. I could care less, because if they're fair, is what they're going to do is they're going to make their decisions based not on allocative issues. They're going to make their decisions based on biological issues and biological information for the good of the species and for the good of the resource, not for the good of the fishermen. And that's all most people ask of the Board of Fish. So I think that was a right-on comment that Jerry made about the availability of well-qualified people.
Mr. Chairman,
yes,
can I
Green. Yeah.
May I amend the bill?
Yeah. Well,
Mr. Chairman, may I amend the bill?
I agree with you, and that's, and you know, my sensitivity is that we do it for the fish and not for user groups, and I think that's the important part for all of us to come to grips with. Yes.
Now, I guess I'd like to, for the committee, if they don't know, I'd like to dispel some ideas some people have. You know, they talk about those commercial fishermen in Cook Inlet. There has not been a commercial fisherman from Cook Inlet on the Board of Fish for the last 35 years. So just think about that. The biggest controversy every 3 years is Cook Inlet. So it's not a matter of representation from the commercial representative in Cook Inlet.
Yeah, I mean, just speaking for myself and the representation, and that's why that you know I have some regard for what Senator Green's bringing forward. It's not about geography; it's about user group, and that's what I see. But it's debatable. It's debatable, and that's why we're here today. So with that, we will next go, and once again, Jerry, thank you very much. We will go to Leroy Cabana of Homer.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Leroy Cabana. I'm a resident of Homer. Almost afraid to say what I am. I had my dander up here when I first read this Senate Bill 284. So I guess I'm going to start with saying I'm a lifelong Alaska person. I do own a seine boat. I do earn a living fishing commercially. But as such, I find myself being treated as an unwanted or undesired person, perhaps to serve on a future Board of Fish seat. Just because I own a salmon seine permit doesn't mean that I don't, in fact, sport fish or personal use fish. I mean, I just ate fresh king salmon here just a couple days ago. I'm going king salmon fishing tomorrow. I'm going to be on the King Salmon Derby on Saturday. And each summer, I eat the shrimp I catch in Prince William Sound, and I can the razor clams that I dig in the summer, and I freeze and smoke my halibut and rockfish, and I hunt deer and moose in Alaska, and I depend on this protein to feed my family all year long. And yet when I read this proposal, I have to hide under a desk or something. It's like now I'm a commercial fisherman, but I'm no longer considered a personal use or a sport fisherman, and I'm offended by that and outraged. And I think that, you know, that most of the people that would consider serving on the Board of Fish would be equally, in fact, the current people serving on the Board of Fish, to suggest to them that they can't be fair and balanced because they have some affiliation with the commercial fishing industry, which is Alaska's largest employer, which more people are associated with than any other industry in the state. And you know, I'm just going to have to settle down and end there, other than the fact that it's worth noting that the vast majority of Alaska seafood is harvested by the commercial fishing fleets statewide. The species harvested are varied from crab to gooey ducks, from sea urchins to pollock, salmon from the Canadian border to the northwest coast of Alaska, cod and the Aleutians, herring all over the state. Geographical differences in the state of this size require informed experience of all kinds. To limit the participation of Board of Fish members to two folks with any connection to the commercial harvest or processing industry out of the seven members of the Board of Fish is short-sighted, way wrong, and I'll just leave it at that. I'm just outraged about this idea.
Questions or comments for Leroy? Yeah, Senator Wagner?
Yeah, I would just like to ask that you leave one of those king salmon in the water for Friday, because I'm going to be down there.
Well, we'll be calling ours in. Okay. Thanks for listening to my testimony. Sorry about being so hot about it, but, you know, I'm a lifelong Alaskan. I mean, I don't want to find myself boxed in as being a commercial fisherman or something and being excluded from participation as somebody else. So thank you.
Yeah, Leroy, thank you very much. Do you go to the Board of Fish meetings?
I have been an active participant at the Board of Fish for 25 years. I'm constantly there. I was at all the staff reports at the beginning of this year in Anchorage for the Upper Cook Inlet thing. I did not participate. I didn't have a dog in the fight. I'm a seine fisherman in Prince William Sound and Lower Cook Inlet, so I didn't have anything going on. I just stopped in to see the temper of the air, and it was nasty as always.
Yeah, nasty as always. Help us out. I wasn't there. I've only been to one Board of Fish meeting. Help me out what that means.
Well, nasty as always refers to allocation. I mean, allocation is always it's the only thing. The Board of Fish is the only body in Alaska that is, by definition, has to wrestle with allocation. Nobody else will handle that animal. You know, that's why the legislator dumps it off on the Board of Fish, because you wouldn't be able to do your business as a legislator if you were actually handling allocation. And so the Board of Fish has to wade through that, and you have people like me that are excited about and passionate about their livelihoods and passionate about their opportunity to participate in sport and personal use. And, you know, the opportunity and the available resources limited, and you have 300,000 people from Anchorage that can drive down there, and then you have an existing commercial fleet. And of that, you know, even of the sport and the personal use, you even have subcategories of drift, you know, commercial or guided and all that other stuff. And so, you know, it gets anytime people are trying to allocate anything, just go allocate anything and see what it turns out like. And at the Board of Fish, it comes with years of high emotions. And so that's what I said.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Stevens?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Leroy, when we heard from Jerry Merrigan of Petersburg, he gave us an estimation of about 70% of the board's time being devoted to commercial fisheries, 20% to sport and personal use. Would you think that's somewhere near the truth?
Yeah, I think that is the truth. I mean, you know, you have to look at it. If you're talking about statewide, almost certainly, it could even be more than that. I mean, statewide, we have to think about, you know, the Anchorage Bowl and the Valley as being a much smaller section of the state geographically, because that's what it is. And fish don't care how many people live in Anchorage. So this whole state is abundant with a fishery resource. And yeah, I mean, this, yeah, at least 75 or 80%. And you know, most of the stuff that the Board of Fish deals with, thank God, is just reasonable management of our resource to give us the best returns to keep it. We are the sterling star in the world, not in the United States, but in the world for fisheries management. We keep our water clean, we manage our resources better than anybody, and the Board of Fish is a huge part player in that deal. And they have to have, experience is the one thing that's been overlooked here. When people talk about typical user groups, you have to have somebody that has an understanding of what it means to have four spools on your gurdy as a troller in Southeast as opposed to six, or, you know, crab fishing in Norton Sound under the ice or whatever. You have to have a broad base of experience. And I'm sorry, I got off track there. Yeah, 75%, 80%.
Thank you, Leroy.
You have
so,
talking to a passionate man here.
Yeah, well, Leroy, while you're wearing your passion there, helps out a little bit. With your experience over the number of years, there must be some things that come to mind that if you had the job of improving the process, what you would do.
Actually, you know what? To tell you the truth, that's I think one thing that here that maybe people. I think the Board of Fish process has improved. I've been sitting in on Board of Fish meetings for 25 years. And I believe that the vetting of people that are going, that are subject to serving on the Board of Fish, and I think that you know they've defined you know what their complicated you know restrictions are as far as like their different you know involvements and their ethics and all that stuff. And the Board of Fish, I know that not everybody's going to agree with this, but the Board of Fish is functioning more like a well-oiled machine today than ever before, and the simple fact that there's some resource problems in the Susitna Valley, and it's being kind of laid at the doorstep of this current Board of Fish is, I think, a little bit unfair.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned the valley. I did, but I'll ask you a follow-up question on that. When you see that, what I would characterize as a major change in the demographics, and projected to be even more major going forward, does that call to question some modifications of how we view the fishery?
I will give you this. I do believe that the management of the South Central resources are going to be under continuous pressure, just like they are down in the lower 48, and the voters are going to eventually prevail as far as like establishing a larger percentage of the harvest of the fish. And I guess even as a commercial fisherman, I mean, I'm all for the Alaska resident person harvesting fish, even above commercial fishing. I've always been that way. I get a little flack from my commercial fishing buddies, but I've always felt that way, that the Alaska state resident, he shouldn't have any problem filling his freezer. And so, you know, I really do support the subsistence and the personal use thing. And I do think that there is going to, over time, this is going to, we're not arguing right this minute about the opportunity to catch fish. If the fish were up there, we wouldn't even be having this argument. We're arguing about why aren't the fish there, and they're trying to solve this situation by restructuring the board, and I'm not sure that's going to achieve that goal.
Okay.
Brief at
ease. We'll go to Mr. Wade Willis on the off-net. Hello, Wade, are you there?
Okay, you there?
Yep, got you loud and clear. Put yourself on the record and any affiliation you might have. We'd be proud to hear from you.
Thank you, Chairman Huggins and Resource Committee members for allowing me to testify in support of the intent of SB 284
My name is Wade Willis. I live in Anchorage. I'm a subsistence fisherman on the top of the river, a committed sport fisherman, and I've owned a guiding company off my fishing trip for the past 10 years. I have a degree in biology, have worked in the past for the ADF&G as well as the Federal Fish and Wildlife. I've also submitted several proposals to the Board of Fish in the past. I support the intent of SB 284 to address the lack of diverse representation on the Board of Fish. I agree that with any board that is populated by political appointees, the legislature should look for methods to ensure that in the future the membership will be diverse and provide fair and equal representation for both the user groups relying on those resources as well as the conservation of those resources. I believe the reason we are discussing this issue at all right now is the fact that historically the Board of Fish has not offered the diversity that we would prefer. I believe the greatest asset of the Board of Fish will have to accomplish its mandate to manage for all Alaskans will hinge on the amount of diversity of representation on the board. I strongly support the legislature addressing the inherent difficulties in ensuring diverse representation on the boards of fish. While I support the intent of the bill, I do have concerns with current wording in the bill that mandates representation only for consumptive user groups. I feel that in situations where a resource basically has only consumptive user groups who rely on the resource, there is a need to provide membership for individuals that represent habitat, biodiversity, and overall ecosystem health concerns. I realize the ADF&G, among others, advise the board on these issues, but I feel, in addition to the role that there should be voting members on the board from the scientific community. Those members, those that represent the concerns for habitat, could be pushing to ensure that no one consumptive user group on the board could dominate the decisions of that board. This would augment potential abuse by any one consumptive user group who may not have the health of the ecosystem as its primary concern. I encourage the committee and the legislature as a whole to work in a spirit of cooperation to put into statute selection requirements that provide a fair and balanced representation on the Board of Fish. This representation must include habitat and ecosystem health representation, in my opinion. Limiting the representation to only consumptive user groups will not provide the diversity needed to effectively manage the fisheries resources, in my opinion. And I thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of myself.
Yeah, and thank you, Wade. Any questions or comments for Wade? Hearing none, we will go to Mr. Rod Arno, Outdoor Council. Rod, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, please put yourself on the record and affiliation.
All right. My name is Rod Arno. I'm the executive director of the Alaska Outdoor Council, statewide coalition. We're an umbrella organization representing over 3,000 individual members and 46 clubs. And the Outdoor Council strongly supports passage of 284, that this is just an evolution that's been ongoing since statehood or before statehood on fisheries management, that a progression of as users come up and as the legislature has in the past taken action to make the statutes on the allocation of fisheries, that we see an increasing, growing need for more in-river fisheries. And in order for this clearly as an allocation issue to be addressed, having this representation of consumptive users makes perfect sense to the Outdoor Council. There isn't a consumptive user that isn't interested in the health and the welfare of the entire ecosystem and the habitat. And the way the board's arranged and has worked is, you know, those assurances have come to us through the Division of Sports Fishes and as well as the Comfish Division. And we think that those scientific needs will clearly be addressed to the board as they have done in the past. But what we're seeing is just this evolution and change in this user group, and we look at what's the most advantageous economically to the entire state of Alaska. I believe that most AOC members would think that there can be a continued growth of the in-river users and still a protection of those habitats. And this isn't just an issue in Cook Inlet. It's a statewide issue that we're coming up on more and more. We see it, and I've years in the past spent a lot of time boarding fisheries on Copper River dip net issues, on Yukon River kingfish issues, and currently we're seeing it on the Kenai as far as dip net users issues, and we see it in southeast, south central as far as halibut allocation. These are things that the Board of Fisheries can take action on that will protect all of Alaska's user groups and continue having fish be an economic advantage to all Alaskans. Senator Huggins, thank you for your time. I'll be available to answer questions.
Yeah, thanks, Rod. Any questions or comments for Mr. Arno? Yeah, and thank you very much, Rod, for what you do for all Alaskans on behalf of the Outdoor Council. Next, we will go to Mr. Paul Shadura. Paul, how you doing?
Thank you, Hiram. Again, thank you, Senator Huggins and the Senate Resource Committee.
Hey, Paul, we're looking at the clock here in the room. I know you're not here, but if we could get you to limit to two minutes, it would help us out today on schedule.
All right. I'll try to be real fast, okay? My name is Paul Shadura. I'm the Executive Director for the Kenai Peninsula Fishermen's Association. Our organization has been a voice for Cook Inlet fisheries for over a half a century. Primarily representing the set net fisheries, we have members within Cook Inlet from Kachemak Bay to the mouth of the Susitna River, east sides and the west sides and the islands. Alaska Statute 1605-221A states appointees should be chosen on their interest to public affairs, good judgment, knowledge, and ability in the field of action of the board. This bill would negate the part that requires the board members to have a diversity of interests and no diverse points of view, to not demand that the board members have a broad view of issues and be willing to arbitrate and compromise is relegating the board process to more confusion and consternation. Surely, members of the body and your electorate would not want their representatives to listen to only some and ignore all others that do not have similar interests. Further on, this within the statute, members shall be appointed without regard to political affiliation or geographical location. Just changing the previous rule now open the door to those that say we should politicize the board process and demand geographical representation. This bill does merit discussion. In 2002, the UFA board at the retreat reviewed different ways to restructure the board to be fair and equitable. In proper time, with cooperation of all stakeholders, these ideas may very well be revisited. It is our opinion at this time that Senate Bill 286, with these changes, is premature to good governmental process. I leave you with this thought by Thomas Hughes. He never wants anything but what's right and fair. Only when you come to settle what's right and fair, it's everything that he wants and nothing that you want. Thank you.
Yeah, Paul, thank you very much for your hard work and your testimony. Questions or comments from Mr. Shadura? Seeing none, next we will go. We have two more testifiers online this time. Is Yakov Rutov? Am I anywhere near it?
Yeah, Yakov Rutov. Good afternoon. My name is Yakov Rutov, and I live in Homer. And I represent myself and a KB Fisheries Association. And this looks like a bill that was introduced with only one area in mind, which we all know is Cook Inlet. What about the rest of Alaska? If there are three personal use fishermen that are appointed who are not part of a commercial or sports sector, that person will probably know nothing about different gear types and have no idea how important fish escapement in the rivers are. I personally think that the Board of Fisheries should make their decisions based on sound biological data, not by politically appointed people who will be biased towards their own agenda. Another thing is, I see this bill will only put two members who represent commercial fishermen out of seven. Is that supposed to seem fair? And if so, to whom? From my experience, commercial fishermen are the most conservation-minded group of people. We want to have enough fish for everybody, and we will always be the first to step up and sacrifice whatever it will take to support our biologists and fishery experts in all areas. This is just another blatant disregard by the sport fish industry for the border fish process. If you don't get what your way, ask for favors from your lawmakers. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rutoff. Questions or comments? And Mr. Rutoff, just for fair and balance, I'm a sports fisherman, and there's also just two sports fishing qualified people. So it would be between those two user groups, it would be equal, I think, by design. But be that as it may, next we'll go to Mr. Jesse Nelson of Homer.
This is Jesse Nelson from Homer, and I'm a commercial fisherman representing myself. I'm also a sport fisherman, as most commercial fishermen are and love to fish. We understand the intricacies of it, the gear, the rules, and so forth. Sadly, I don't believe the reverse is true. The prevailing view is that commercial fishermen are bad and their livelihood should be taken away. In this context, to put five sport personal use board members to two commercial fish board members is just plain wrong. The Board of Fish makes rules and intricate, detailed regulations for commercial fishermen all over the state, AYK, Bristol Bay, Southeast, not just Upper Cook Inlet, and all gear types, seine, pot, longline, gillnet, for example, and a multitude of species, not just salmon. Board members with vast knowledge of and experience with these details is vital. There have been sport fish representatives on the board who did not know how a seine operated. How can such a person make rules for seiners without the counsel of diverse commercial fishermen on the board? That would be like me being on the medical board and making rules for doctors on how they should operate. Periodically, this discussion of changing the board makeup arises, and each time logic prevails in that good, knowledgeable board members are what is needed and what works. We do not need excessive representation of one user group over another when people's livelihood are at stake. This bill should be defeated. Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you, Jesse, very much for your testimony. Questions or comment for Ms. Nelson? Seeing none, are there any other people online?
Is there one? No.
Mm-mm. No, we don't see it.
Okay, any closing comments from committee members or questions? Okay,
we're good. Yeah. Oh, no, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, listen. Well, I'm just very concerned about, as we look at the amount of activity the board has that affects commercial fisheries and the limited numbers of commercial fishermen that would be allowed to be on the board, it just seems to me that it's completely out of whack, and I'd hope that we would not pass this bill.
Well, you should discuss with Senator Wagner the having of seven sport fish people, fair and balanced, to be on comprise the board.
Well, if they were seven from Kodiak, I might agree to it.
We can't have your...
You missed my entire point, though, Senator Green.
It was very conveniently
missed
your point. Yeah.
Well, in closing today, we're going to hold this bill over, but I think for all of us, the fish, as the species we're talking about and the challenge we have, and the more we gravitate towards user groups, probably the more self-defeating it becomes, because there are some areas in the state have changed, and we have to examine those changes and look at what parameters going forward are most appropriate. There's not any one given solution. It's debatable, but it's a debate that will continue to emerge over time. With that, we're adjourned.
I'll say it next time.